This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. We're answering your questions. Questions come to us via radio program at AOL.com. We'll endeavor to answer as many as we can this hour. Layla Mudin is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. So, welcome back, Layla, and let's start with our first question.
Okay, we've got an email from Aaron. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I was so excited after hearing about the benefits of bone broth, but all of that soon came to a halt when I've read some things that said it could be a source of lead, and she discusses a particular link to Chris Kresser's website about bone broth, lead toxicity. Should we be concerned? He seems to bring up a good point. Do either of you believe consuming this broth exposes us to lead or other damaging byproducts? Let me first tell everybody that I went on the website, and Chris Kresser gave a very, very balanced explanation of all of that. I want it, everybody needs to know.
So first of all, who is Chris Kresser? Share with our listeners who he is. He's actually an interesting resource.
He's a health practitioner. I'm not sure if he's a chiropractor or an acupuncturist.
I think he might be a licensed acupuncturist, I think.
Okay. And he's got a very nice website. He puts out some really informative, thought-provoking articles and kind of clears away the cobwebs. And basically, that's what he's done on this. He's basically analyzed in bone broths how much lead and how much is too much. And apparently, lead is in a whole lot of things. It's in our municipal water systems. It's in the soil. It's in our food. It can be in bone broth because these toxic metals, they don't hang out in circulation. They move to our bones, our brains, organs. And the same thing happens with animals.
Right.
So, but what we're getting is pretty well insignificant. But having said that, you want to be able to source, if you're making your own bone broth, you know, from good sources, from grass-fed animals, a butcher who deals in local or sustainable toxin-free farming of livestock, all of that. And if you're getting your bone broth elsewhere from a site where you're actually purchasing it, you want to be able to inquire what the source is. But keep in mind, we're all full of lead to some degree.
Right. And our bones are actually
full
of lead.
If you use a battery.
Our bones are full of lead,
too.
Our bones are full
of
lead.
Our bones are full of lead.
Yeah, and in fact, some people ask me, you know, why, oh, why, you know, now that I'm 65, when lead has been outlawed and I'm very careful about filtering my water and everything I eat is, you know, pure, clean, and organic, why do I seem to have high lead levels? And the answer is, what were you doing, you know, in 1958? Because that was before the outlawing of leaded gasoline and lead paint. And that's when you were growing and building bone. And the lead got incorporated in your bone, and it stayed there like in a bank, you know, unmolested, until you reach a certain age where you actually start to give up bone in osteoporosis. And then you release the lead, but unfortunately, the lead doesn't always exit your body. It sometimes gets released into your tissue from the bone, and or it can go to your brain. So this is why that is an interesting question. You know, but go ahead. I'm sorry, I interrupted your stream of thought there.
No. That was essentially it. Make sure that your source is pretty good. If anybody out there is concerned about toxic metals, you know, like lead, like mercury, the best way to get tested is to do urine toxic metal tests. It's not enough to do a blood test.
Right.
You know, because these heavy metals don't hang out in serum.
Yep.
They're spilling over into our circulation. They're stored in our organs, our bones, our tissues, our brains, all of that.
Yep.
So, yeah.
So
let
me just comment on this, which is there is now a genre in health and nutrition writing, which is along these lines. It's like something that you thought was good for you turns out to be really bad for you. So, for example, it's like the perils of juicing. It's like juicing. Oh, yeah, juicing's really good. You know, you get all these raw enzymes. And it's like now, no, juicing is bad. Juicing can contain too many oxalates, which can be damaging to the tissues. You know, or in this case, it's like goitrogen. It's like, oh, yeah, all those, you know, great, you know, soy and all the wonderful, you know, cabbage family vegetables. No, don't eat them. They can destroy your thyroid. And I try to take a sort of a balanced view of some of these scaremongering articles. But they are sort of headline grabbing because there's nothing like telling a person, hey, you know, you idiot, you thought you were doing something healthy for yourself, but you're actually putting yourself into the grave. You know, it's it's kind of dramatic. So that this a little bit along those lines. It's like, oh, bone broth, that's really healthy. Like, no, you're getting lead toxic, you idiot. And I think one has to be a little careful about the source of the bones. I mean, it used to be that that bones were not a good source, for example, of calcium. They used to have advertisements for bone meal calcium, but that was actually one of the worst sources of calcium. You think, well, hey, you know, you want healthy bones, eat bone meal, right? The problem is that they would get the bones from cattle that would graze next to highways, and the cars were spewing lead into the
get your lead here,
right? And they tested some of these brands of bone meal, and they found unacceptably high levels of lead. I think this is getting a little bit better, but we know that the problem with lead is not over, as evinced by the terrible tragedy in Flint, Michigan. And you know, Flint's just the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. There are so many places in the United States where there's excess lead. Recently, they had to close down a whole bunch of fountains in schools in New Jersey because they were literally spewing lead. They were coming through old pipes, and you know, I never liked to drink from the drinking fountain when I was a kid. You know, they would say, you know, just drink from the drinking fountain. I would think like yuck, because there'd be like algae growing on the faucet, you know, and it just never looked healthy. Plus, all the other kids would be like, you know, sucking on the fountain and spitting into it, and it's like, I'm not going to have that.
Exactly, yuck, right?
Real yuck factor. Anyway,
you know, even in my undergraduate education, I remember one of my professors telling us, you know, you always want to encourage variety all the time. For instance, if the only fish you're going to eat is tuna, you're going to be exposed to more mercury than you should. You want variety always in the diet. So an over-reliance on any particular food or source or anything like that is never a great idea.
It's just like having it's like having all apple stock in your portfolio. You know, you saw what just happened to apple.
Right.
It's a great stock,
right,
but like
exactly.
You know, diversify.
You want some Microsoft. You may want some, you know, other.
Actually, these days you don't want any of those.
Google, probably. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Aaron, we hope that answers your question. Enjoy your bone broth. And listen, if you're a healthy person and you're detoxing well and you've got nice, good, high vitamin D levels, that also helps with your own detoxification.
Right.
Having a high vitamin D, getting some sunlight every day now that the weather is warmer, helps to upregulate your glutathione. And glutathione is your master antioxidant for detox.
Right.
So this is good. Make sure you yourself, you're eating clean food, you're drinking pure water, you're getting full, you know, deep, restful sleep, you exercise, you detox well, you know, all of this will work in your favor to make sure that there's really no accumulation, you know, unless you're exposed.
Yeah, I don't want to overdrive the point home, but as we speak, I'm getting ready to use some bone broth that I prepared. I mean, all the bones that come from the food I eat now go into the crock pot, and I cook them sometimes with vegetables, and I make the broth, and I store it. And then I make a lot of soups. So today I'm going to be making parsnip soup. I had to go to two markets to find parsnips. They're fresh enough. And I'll put some carrots, maybe a couple of small potatoes in there with the broth, season it with sage, use the immersion blender to make a kind of a creamy soup because, you know, it's springtime. Parsnips are really great in the spring. Root vegetables are great in the spring. And, you know, until the really hot weather sits in, it's a nice hearty soup, you know, for cool spring days.
And, you know, tell us how you make your bone broth. I mean, the thing is any time you have bones, you don't necessarily keep them stored in the fridge. You put them in the freezer.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then when you're ready to use them, you take them out.
Mm-hmm.
You put them in your crock pot or in your stock pot on the stovetop.
Right.
With some water and maybe some other root vegetables or celery or anything like that, and you just simmer it for hours and hours and hours.
Even cuttings from vegetables, I mean, as long as it's not rotten, maybe it's something like the end of a, you know, scallion that you don't want to put in your salad. It's a little tough, but it'll go well into the broth, and it'll impart some flavor, but also some nutrition to the bone broth.
Exactly. And those vegetable scraps, you know, those outer layers of the cabbage leaves that we're afraid to use because they were too close to the soil or something.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But these are all usable. Vegetable scraps are actually very, very usable. Wonderful for stock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And any chef would tell you that as well. So.
Yeah. So I always have stock. There's never a time when I don't have stock available.
Yeah.
Very useful
cooking
ingredient.
Mm-hmm. Me
Great.
Too. Right.
All right.
Aaron, thank you for your question. Enjoy your bone broth.
Right.
Okay. We've got an email from Nancy. Nancy is looking for natural alternatives. She says, I'm diabetic with other health issues. She doesn't tell us what they are.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there may be better alternatives. I have so many side effects on the medication they put me on. What can I do about that? She doesn't name any medication.
She doesn't specify whether it's type 1 or type 2 diabetes. I guess it's probably type 2.
No.
Because if it's she would be talking about insulin if it was type 1. Mm. So mm-hmm. Look, there was recently a headline that I think it was like the duh headline of the week, if not the year, if not the decade, which is that diabetes reversible with diet and lifestyle. Like, duh. This is our stock and trade at the Hoffman Center. You know, show me virtually anyone who has type 2 diabetes. And if they are willing to listen to what we suggest, and that's not always the case. Sometimes we'll say, look, you've got to make very, very, very substantial changes in your diet. And I don't mean a starvation diet. I mean just really changing the type of food you eat. You know, just maybe going on a real paleo-type diet. It is eminently reversible. I mean, we've seen patients go from a hemoglobin A1C of like 11, 12 to normal with the right changes. So that of course, and now maybe she's angling for some vitamin pills. Well, you know, I think certain pills are beneficial, but I don't think they're only about 20% of the game. Things that we like, obviously, alpha lipoic acid, chromium, they're incorporated in a product called Diaxanol.
Dr. Hoffman, I just want to talk a little bit more about the diet. Many people, and even mainstream physicians, mainstream healthcare people, they don't realize that type 2 diabetes is a lifestyle disease.
Mm-hmm.
It is simply a lifestyle disease.
Yep.
We've heard too many people say, oh, it's in my family, this was bound to happen. No, it was not. You are simply living your life in a way that turned those diabetes genes on.
Exactly.
But did you know it's within your power to live your life in a way to turn those diabetes genes off?
Mm-hmm.
People are flabbergasted.
Right.
When we tell them that type 2 is a lifestyle condition.
Mm-hmm.
And you change your lifestyle, you can get rid of the disease.
Right.
So
the only problem that I see in type 2 diabetes is there's a certain I call it like a Titanic-like effect. It was, you know, you see the iceberg looming, but it's very hard to turn that gigantic ship around. There's such a momentum towards progressive diabetes in some people. They get heavier. They get progressively more tired. Their brain literally is starved for sugar because you get even though your blood sugar may be high, you get insulin resistance in the brain, type 3 diabetes, you become depressed.
Yeah.
Men develop low testosterone, so their motivation wanes, their ability to exercise wanes, and you get into sort of this sort of energy deficit, vicious cycle. And so what's tough is to turn around the Titanic, is to A, begin to motivate patients, B, to overcome their enormous cravings for sweets and carbohydrates, which is really very, very powerfully addictive, both on a psychological and a physical basis. And then affect change. Now, so a very determined patient with the right coaching and guidance can do that. But I got to say, don't you agree, Leila, if we had a dozen patients a week with type 2 diabetes, we wouldn't mind at all. That would be the ideal kind of patient for nutritional intervention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Because we know in most cases those people will be cured. The time when they won't be cured is a late-stage diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
Then we call it's turning from type 2 to type 1, where they become insulin-dependent. You know, when the pancreas is completely worn out.
We call it MODY, then, maturity onset diabetes. Mm. Which is actually where you, or type 1.5 sometimes, which is a term that means that you already have crossed the Rubicon in terms of your production of insulin. Your pancreas is worn out by overproducing insulin for many, many years, and eventually it deteriorates in terms of its ability to respond to carbohydrates. That is a situation where... But anyway, so, you know...
Yeah. But even those who then are relegated to administer insulin the rest of their lives, there's a way to do it, because you don't want all that insulin either.
Right.
Having to self-administer so much insulin keeps us in fat storage mode, keeps the diabetic fat. Lower carb diet is still required so that you administer the least amount of insulin possible, so that any excess weight can be shed. We've had several type 1 diabetics who've dropped more than 50 pounds on a low carb diet, because then they were able to reduce the units of insulin.
Yep.
They'd have to administer. And it's very, very gratifying to watch, because for the first time in their lives, this is happening. And never were they counseled to eat this way by their mainstream nutritionist or their doctor or their endocrinologist, which, you know, is terrible, in my opinion. So,
I think they all too often they're the mainstream doctors, because of perhaps their own training or even their own lifestyles, they... don't expect that a patient can be motivated sufficiently to make these changes. And, you know, a disease is a great motivator. It might be one thing to say, well, I want to look really svelte in the bathing suit. Okay, you know, you can be ambivalent about that and decide instead to eat, you know, the pizza and the ice cream. That's your choice. But when it comes to a disease which can cause you to lose your eyesight, to lose your limbs, to become impotent, to have an early heart attack, to have a higher risk of cancer, to have a much higher risk of Alzheimer's disease, to go on dialysis.
Oh,
you know, maybe, just maybe, the prospect of those things is sufficient motivator to undertake a little bit of deprivation initially. But, you know,
I have a little story to tell.
Please, please.
Back when I was an undergrad and I was taking organic chemistry, my professor was in a wheelchair, below the knee amputation. I forget if it was his left leg or his right leg, from diabetes.
This is a nutrition professor.
I remember this. Yeah, this is my organic chemistry professor.
Okay, okay.
And I remember visiting him during his office hours, and he was just getting some takeout lunch delivered.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Chinese food, and it was lo mein.
Oh, boy. Okay. Noodles.
And even then, I knew. I said, he doesn't get it.
Right, right.
But I literally had to hold my breath.
Right.
Because I was seeking his counsel on how to do a little bit better in organic chemistry.
Well, here's a guy who has at his disposal a mastery of the very subject that sheds light on why he was in the predicament he was in. But, you know, it's like he's not putting two and two together. You know, he's not using the understanding of the biochemistry to affect a better life. But, you know, that's how I think a lot of people are. They, you know, like, you know, they have a superb understanding of one thing or another, but they don't apply it in their lifestyles. Anyway, enough, you know, enough ragging on that subject.
Nancy, thank you for your email.
Yeah.
Nancy does need a workup because we don't know the type of diabetes she has, the other health issues she mentions. We don't know her medications either. So, Nancy, you do need a workup with a qualified integrative physician, mm-hmm. for starters.
Great.
Yeah.
So we have time for another question.
Okay. We've got an email from John. Hey, Doc, he says, recent on your show, you mentioned maintaining good spinal health by keeping our discs plump and well-hydrated through the right kind of dietary approach and nutritional support. Would you please share some of those approaches with us?
Okay. Well, okay. I think diet plays a role because there is such a thing as a pro-inflammatory diet and an anti-inflammatory
yes.
diet. So you want a diet that's rich in fresh fruits and vegetables, preferably not highly sugared fruit concentrates, and
yes.
A diet where you're avoiding the foods that are potential allergens, such as gluten for some or dairy for others. That in itself helps. But then what are some things that plump the cartilage?
Yeah.
Well, glucosamine with chondroitin. I've been taking that for the last 20 years. I'm fortunate enough mm-hmm. to be able to continue running and cycling and, continue most of my activities. I don't know, maybe I'm just lucky, or maybe, just maybe, all that glucosamine chondroitin helped to plump my my cartilage and has
yeah.
helped to keep my disc spaces from contracting to the point where I have a lot of sciatica and, aches and pains. MSM, a sulfur-containing compound, is also helpful, providing sulfur, because that's sulfur is a component of cartilage. And then
hydration status.
Yeah.
There are people who don't drink enough water.
Surely. Mm-hmm.
And they expect to have, they expect to function well, and if you're not drinking enough water, that won't happen.
Right.
And
an
yeah.
important consideration is omega-3 fatty acids, because Dr. Joseph Maroon has demonstrated that individuals who are earmarked for spinal surgery, he's a neurosurgeon, so that's what he does. He said, look, wait 6 months, we'll see if you still need it. He gave half the group fish oil and gave half the group placebo capsules. And he found that the fish oil group, a high percentage of them, no longer required surgery because the fish oil had an anti-inflammatory effect. Maybe it had a decompressive effect by regenerating some of the cartilage that was in their discs. So that would be beneficial as well. Hyaluronic acid, somewhat controversial, but hyaluronic acid supplements can be beneficial. I don't like just collagen. Collagen per se is one of the cheapest supplements around. It's basically animal hooves that have been denatured. And, you might as well, if you want collagen, just go get some Knox gelatin. It's cheaper than buying collagen supplements.
You want your body to be able to make collagen. And,
yeah.
and I think an important component of that is vitamin C.
Yes, vitamin C is
proline,
a cofactor.
Proline, hydroxyproline, all
yep.
of that is helpful for collagen synthesis, maybe
yes.
a little zinc. All good for skin,
right?
But also for joints, cartilage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So those are some of the considerations. Anti-inflammatories, we
yeah.
can consider, curcumin, boswellin, some of those things.
Doing yoga is wonderful for the flexibility of the spine as well as the other joints.
Got to do it. Because
and it helps with the cerebrospinal fluid movement,
mm-hmm.
which you circulating.
Right.
I
only wish that I had started yoga earlier in my life in earnest. I was, kind of got away with a lot until I was probably in my 40s, and then I began to realize that I really needed to do more stretching, because once your body gets stiff and the fascia gets tight, then you can be prone to all kinds of problems. And so if you don't stretch it, those tendons and the fascia will tighten up. And you may think you have a back problem, but what you may actually have is you may have a hamstring problem.
Tight hamstrings. Yeah.
You may have a calcaneus problem, problem with your calf muscle, or even the muscles in the feet, which can send signals to your knees, causing knee problems. Those are things that really need to work on preventively so that you don't end up with the need for disc surgery. So anyways, this, by way of a general discussion, I think people should undertake preventive action to prevent back problems rather than, you know, once, what do I do now that I have a back problem? Well, you know, that's, now you got to go see the orthopedist sometimes. Hopefully not.
Right.
You can benefit maybe from acupuncture, prolotherapy, other therapies that can reverse that. All right. That's all the time that we have for today's edition of Intelligent Medicine. So I want to thank our listeners for joining us. I want to remind our listeners that consultations are available with our Hoffman Center nutritionist, Layla Mudin, should you decide that it's too far to go to come to the Hoffman Center. Maybe you're listening from some remote outpost. She will also consult with you via the phone. You can send her your medical records to review, and she'll impart some of the wisdom that we share with you each week here on Q&A with Layla. Thanks, Layla, for joining us.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.